That morning, I had an appointment to give blood, and then I was going from there to the office for a normal day of work, and then I had an evening church meeting planned, so I was preparing for that during the day. As I got ready for the day, I headed out to the car, and as I did, my neighbor was coming out at the same time, and he said to me, "Did you hear what happened in New York? A plane just hit the World Trade Center." This was probably a little before 9 o'clock that morning. So I left as planned. I went to Lancaster General to my appointment. And while I was hooked up to the equipment and squeezing the little ball to keep the blood pumping as I gave blood, we were watching on TV as events in New York and then also in Washington, D.C. unfolded that day. Well, if you're old enough, then you have your own memories of that particular day, as is the case when momentous historical events unfold, the "where were you when you heard" kind of memories make a deep impression that stays with you. And now it's been 20 years, as you know. One of the leaders, one of the questions that church leaders face as you plan services and lead ministries is, when and how do you mark major historical or cultural events in the life of our nation in church services? And if you've been here for any significant amount of time, you know that maybe we do that less than some churches, in part because we believe that the church is more than one nation and its history, and so we don't mark every event that comes along. And yet this morning, we want to think together for a little bit about 9/11/01 and the events of that day, and how they still speak to us, and particularly how they can speak to us who follow Jesus today. And I have a sermon helper this morning with a unique view who is going to share with us. And then eventually we'll see how this particular topic also happens to fit in with what we're talking about in this series that we are in called Awkward and Essential. If you have been joining us in person or online for a while, then my helper today is not going to be a stranger to you, but you're more likely to see him playing guitar enthusiastically toward the back of the stage. Carl Sandell is his name. He and his wife, Lee, are originally from New York, and they retired to E-Town in 2014. In addition to selling them a nice home, their realtor invited them to Ebic, so thanks to Heidi Risser for that. And just last year, before the COVID shutdown, we invited Carl to join our staff as one of our safety co-directors. So in the years that he has been here, he's been getting more and more connected to God's work through our church. So I'm going to invite Carl to join me here, and he is going to share a little bit with us this morning.
Thanks, Pastor Adam, for the opportunity. Thanks for being here and listening. I sort of, as I do at work, have all these things prepared, and maybe I'll refer to it, but I really want to speak to everyone from the heart. Forgive me if I get choked up. Some of you who may not know me well might not know that I'm a retired captain from the NYPD. And there was a time when I was chosen to be the commanding officer of a special unit. That special unit, which I won't get into in detail because I want to share other things in the time allotted, was to be a handpicked unit where I could pick my own people, and I answered directly to the police commissioner, and I would get a promotion. The first promotion being what would be to the equivalent of, say, a lieutenant colonel in the Army. I was a captain at the time. I had one thing left before this unit started, which was to meet with the police commissioner. I had an appointment to meet with him at 10 o'clock. I came in out of the subway in my nicest suit, my shine shoes, in my I must say, groomed to the extent that none of you have ever seen me. And ready to meet with him. Now, it might sound ironic being a New York City police officer, but I hate crowds. I don't like to be crammed in with a lot of people. So my routine every morning was to get out of the subway and let everybody push and shove and get out and race out, and then I walk out by myself. And I did that this morning that I had the interview with the police commissioner. But this morning was a little different. I walked out, and as I walked out, I saw people running in a northbound direction while I was in the subway, came out of the subway. And as a quick aside, one of the things you learn in training as a police officer, if you're going towards the call of a crime in progress and you see people running away, there's usually something bad going on there. So I'm looking and I'm taking a tactical position, thinking somebody's robbing somebody, somebody's shooting somebody, somebody's stabbing somebody. I don't see a thing. So finally I take out my shield. Now remind you, I'm in my suit, ready for an interview with a police commissioner. And I just shout into the crowd, "Police, what's going on?" And a woman says, "Look up, look at the towers." This is what I saw. I was about 2-3 blocks away. So I'm standing there, having no training whatsoever, nobody in this country did, to deal with something like this. And my mind is racing. My mind is racing faster than I could say it, but my mind is saying, is this a fire? Is it a bomb? Is it an accident? Is it terrorism? I have no idea. But as I'm standing there processing this, watching everybody running north, I wind up seeing this. That crash was almost over my head, though I don't want you to get the wrong picture. I was not in harm's way at that time. But there was this rumble that I can't even describe to you. A rumble that affected my hearing. Perhaps you see me when I'm up there taking in and putting in earplugs when I'm playing. That's why. Sorry, got to look at my notes, keep my pace. So what I'm going to do now, in the time allotted, is explain some of the things that had affected me, that changed my life. You really cannot, unless I guess you're a sociopath, be an eyewitness to the cold-blooded murder of 2,600 people and not have that permanently change you. At the time, I knew the Lord, but was not following him closely. This changed my life in so many ways, and I want to share with you not only how it changed my life, but I want to give you from my heart what I think is a call to action, and how perfectly it dovetails where Pastor Adam and others are bringing this church with groups where we could get together and be with each other. I'm going to look first, I'm going to break it down into two things. One thing is this. These are people on the street. These are not my photographs, obviously. I went to work. I worked about 30 hours that day and had a turnaround after about 2 hours at home hugging Lee and the kids, or one of my daughters. My other was in Messiah College. And then went and go home. But this is not about me. I had it easy, relatively. I'm not a hero. The hero's pictures are in the papers. Their names were called out. Yes. So this is what was going on in the street. For a while, I contemplated this. Now, if you look, there's a place where the plane hit, and you'll see in the towers there's an area below the plane, an area above where the plane hit. Now, the people that were there where the plane hit, they're gone. They're just all instantly taken. The people below where the plane hit, they had a chance to get out. We didn't know at that time the towers were going to fall, but many didn't make it out, but many did have a chance. The people above, the people in this picture that I want to concentrate on. As I'm standing there watching this and going to work, I was in the legal bureau, so looking back, it was almost comical, all these guys in suits kind of running around doing police work. But the people up there, they all know that they don't have much time left. Helicopters couldn't get up there because of the smoke to rescue them. They couldn't get down because there's just a wall of fire blocking them. And over time, over the years, my mind kept going back to them. And I'm looking at these poor people. Well, one of the things that hit home that I highly recommend you all do starting now is Lee, for those of you who don't know me well, Lee's my wife, and my two daughters, and now my granddaughter, have a hard, fast rule. What that rule is, what the law of our house is never, ever separate angry. If you have an argument, you say, we'll argue later, we'll continue this, but I love you. Because none of us are guaranteed to come home. I think Paul, when he wrote to the Ephesians, saying, don't let the sun go down on your anger, probably knew what he was talking about. I think we could assume that. Let's all follow that. And let's all follow that in our lives. Now, the people up there, I'm thinking, and again, for those of you who don't know me, I'm a very ambitious person. I not only had to be a cop, but I had to be a captain. I went to law school. I became the commanding officer of the legal bureau. Then when I retired, I became a federal court litigator. Now I not only want to strum the guitar, but I take guitar lessons to be as best as I can. That's just me. And I don't suggest that because of what I'm saying today, anybody stops having their goals. Anybody stops being ambitious. I still am. I say to Lee, I'm ready for my next profession, and Lee tells me, no, you are not. I've had enough of this. But what I think of these people up there is there was a moment of time where there was probably competition going up the corporate ladder. There was people who were nervous and scared and sick about papers in their hands, because that paper, that deadline, was the most important thing in the world. People were arguing, competing, gossiping, all this stuff going on, all the stuff we always do, that I always do. Trust me, I don't hold myself above anybody. Probably hold myself below them. But in one split second, that all becomes meaningless. So what I'm going to challenge myself and you and us as a congregation is to, let's not wait until, God forbid, something like this happens in our lives. Let's see things in perspective. Let's love one another. Because all that other stuff, all the fighting, the he did this and she did that and I don't like this and this schedule and that and this politics and are you right, are you left, are you conservative, are you a liberal, and sniping at each other on Facebook, where does it do to us but rob us of what God has put us on this earth to do? Now, what is that? Here's what Jesus told us. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. we as a church, and I don't just mean Ebik, I mean the whole country, try to come up with schemes and ways and all kinds of ways to bring people to the Lord. How are we going to get people to church? How are we going to get people to the Lord? Well, guess what? The Lord told us how to do it. People are going to see how we love each other, and they're going to know that we're his disciples. Unfortunately, and I'm not talking about Ebik, I'm talking about all the garbage I see on Facebook now. I'm not seeing that right now. But let's start, because this is not a touchy-feely, kumbaya, let's feel good about each other statement that Jesus gave. Look at those first three words. It's a command. So this is a command. It's a new command. It's not any less of a command than we shouldn't be stealing, we shouldn't be committing murder, we shouldn't be committing adultery. This is a command that our God gave us. Let's break that down. And how are we to love one another? As I have loved you. I think every single person sitting here today knows the depth of that love. The depth of the love that God, Jesus, has for us, that he's commanded us to have for one another. Now, on the morning of 9/11, I witnessed two things. I witnessed the culmination and apex of evil and hate. And that culmination reached its apex in a cowardly act of murder. But I also witnessed the culmination of love that reached its apex in help and sacrifice. And I pray that we as a congregation, that we as a nation, never have to see this again. But let's still go forward with what the Lord has us do, which is the culmination and apex of love, the love that he has for us. So I'm going to show you just a series of pictures of people helping each other selflessly, sacrificing themselves. That Officer Suarez, he is no longer with us. He's one of the names on the memorial. He spent his time helping each other, helping people out. There are pictures, because of the kids are in the audience, I'm not going to show you. But here's some things about what happened that day. Not only with a self-sacrifice of the first responders get all the credit, and they should get the credit. But there are a lot of other people pitching in love in ways that they can, because let's face it, all of us are called for everything. As Kirsten read, there are different parts of the body. But let's take the part that we are, the person that God made us, and let's give in love. And I'll give you some examples of what I saw. When my officers and others were mustered up, ready for action, a Poland Spring delivery truck pulled into the middle of us, and the man got out and literally emptied his big truck of all his water and laid it out in front of the officers and said, "Here, guys, you need this more than I do today." That's love. He wasn't a first responder, but he took what he had, and he loved. I went into a hardware store to get paint masks, because that's all we had. You know, we didn't carry around respirators with us. And I grabbed some paint masks for myself and for my subordinates, because, you've seen pictures of what's flying around out there that we've all inhaled. And the man refused to take money from me. People came the next morning and were cooking and bringing so many meals and so much to drink for us and meals that I'm telling you, I probably could have gained 100 pounds in Ground Zero if I wanted to. People were pouring out with what they can do. People from churches, from synagogues, came out to pray for us. And I didn't know I made an impact with my subordinates, but when there was a church group out there praying for people, they all laughed and said, "Hey, Carl, there's your people. Go get some prayer." And I said to myself, well, I guess I made more of an impact with them than I thought I did. But I did get prayer. You just saw love, caring, overwhelming. It kept us going. So I'm going to challenge you, and I'm going to ask you to keep that going now. Let's all do it. Help me to do it. Some of you who know me well have seen me in my most horrible moods, and I could be not the friendliest person all the time. But let's grow together. Let's learn together. Because what did Jesus say? I tell you, I have some very close friends that thank God he gave me in this congregation that I've developed. And I love them dearly, and I think they love me dearly. And I have a blast with them, and I treat them well. And they treat me well. But you know what Jesus said about that? He said, guys, that's no big deal. It's meaningless to me. You treat your friends well. You love your friends. You love the people who you get along with. Tax collectors do that. In our day and age, it would be the drug dealers do that. Guys in jail do that. Everybody does that. No, I'm calling you to something higher. I'm calling to love the people who you don't get along with. You don't have to have touchy-feely feelings, but you have to follow the command. It's a command. And what did Jesus say? Now, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to look around this room. And I don't want you to embarrass anybody or embarrass myself, but I want you to look around this room and think, who in this room, who in this congregation, you feel is the least of this congregation? Who do you think's the last person you would want to spend the day with? It might be me, and that's okay. It might be my feeling about you too. I don't know. But what does Jesus tell us to do for these least of them? The way you treat the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did to me. So let's all think about this as we go into this new season. Let's think about how we're commanded to love and how the least of the people here, the one who drives you nuts, the one who maybe plays that electric guitar louder than you want to hear it, you treat each other the way we would treat the Lord, as if he were standing up here talking to us today. And then, the world will know that we're his disciples, because it does not go on anywhere in the world. And let us be the place where that goes on. I'm going to wrap up. I'm probably way past my time, but Adam's very courteous, because maybe I'm on a roll here, I don't know. But I'm going to ask you to do something. There's a word in the Bible, it's not used too often, it's in the Old Testament. The word is hineni. Because the question I ask now is, okay, God, Carl just spoke about God ordering us to love each other. All right, good, I'll love each other, but what do we do now? I'm still going to walk out and have my lunch, and what do I do? And my answer is, I really don't know. I don't know how I'm going to obey this. But I do know there's one thing we can do. There's a word in the Bible. It's called hineni. It's used three times. When God told Abraham to sacrifice his son, when Moses was at the burning bush, and when Isaiah was being ordered to prophesy about the coming Messiah, who we know who that is. And God called these three people, and their response was hineni. Hineni, the literal translation, means here am I, but it doesn't mean I'm standing here. It means here am I, I'm here for you, what do you want me to do? So if we could leave with two things today, let's leave with, we're commanded to love each other, and we're going to love each other, and we're going to love, and we're going to treat the least of us, as if we would treat the Lord, and not just our friends. And how do we do it? We just say to the Lord, here I am. Things will come up. The opportunity will come up. And we just stay open to the Lord and say, Hineni. And the Lord will tell us what to do. He's like that. So let's love one another. Let's start today. Let's start now. Let's drop the barriers of what side you're on. We're all on the same side. Now, as to being all on the same side, I watched for 4 hours yesterday. It was an emotional roller coaster, but I had to do it. I watched for 4 hours the memorial that was in New York City. And it took 4 hours to read the names of the people murdered. And when I saw all these names and these pictures, I realized that the target of evil did not care what side they were targeting. There were people from all religions, all races, all genders, I assume all sexual orientations, old, young, rich, poor, every profession, high school dropouts, doctorates. Evil did not care who it targeted. Let us show that love does not discriminate either, that love doesn't care who it's targeting, that we show God's love. And I'm going to wrap this up by reading a part of a letter from somebody who's much more eloquent than I in talking to the church. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. It's one thing I tend not to see here, to be honest with you. Don't invite people to church. Invite them to dinner. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Those who are mourning with me today, I thank you. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. So my brothers and sisters, I beseech you, and with me, like I said, I am not standing tall talking down to anybody. I have my moments, as people know. I have a lot of them. But let us, going forward, if this world gets darker and this society gets darker, which I hope I'm wrong, but I suspect it will, let's start today by being that light, that city set on a hill that we're called to be. Let's not make it just a coincidence that we are on High Street. Thanks for your time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for sharing with us this morning. So our theme for this series that we're in is awkward and essential. I looked up the word awkward because I was curious, and if we're talking about this, what does that, when you define it, what is it? Awkward, oh, thank you. That's all right. There's an illustration for you. Awkward has three definitions. Number one, it's causing difficulty. It's hard to do or to deal with. That's awkward. Number two, it's causing or feeling embarrassment or inconvenience. Number three, awkward is not smooth or graceful. You know, loving like Jesus taught and modeled for us will be awkward in all of those ways at times. It will be difficult. It will put you in hard to deal with situations, and it will put you in proximity to hard to deal with people. Sometimes loving like Jesus will cause embarrassment or inconvenience, for sure. Frequently, it will not be smooth or graceful in all of those aspects Carl and other responders on 9/11 experienced. And yet they chose to love, and we have that same choice. And I would say this for Jesus followers, love is not just a crisis response. I mean, it's a way of life. We do it always. I mean, when we're in crisis or when we're not, when it's just everyday life, we choose to love. Even though it's awkward, because it is essential. Because Jesus gave us that command. Once Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. In the command that Carl read for us out of John 13, he kind of raised the standard. Now he said, love as I have loved you. And so we have that invitation to follow suit. And I would leave you with this question. And this is a question for us to ask, not just once and done, but daily, more than once a day. The question is, what does love require of me? If, like Carl says, we say, Hineni, Lord, here I am, then the next question is, what does love require of me in this moment, in this situation, with this person? Sometimes opportunities to express that love will just come, you know, to our doorstep. Other times we may have to seek them out. But that's what Christians have been doing for 2,000 years. That's why the church still exists. That's why we're here. Because sometimes better, sometimes worse, Christians have done that. They have asked that question, what does love require of me? And then they have done it. In the midst of a crisis, in the midst of everyday life and everything in between, when it's easy, when it's awkward, may this be what defines us who follow Jesus, that we love relentlessly, practically, daily, in every way. What a high privilege and calling. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you for Carl and so many like him who gave so much 20 years ago in New York City and Washington, D.C. and in other places far and wide. Thank you for their example of self-sacrifice. May we remember and honor their service not only in our thoughts, not only in our words, but in our deeds. God, would you prompt us all to return to the question again and again, what does love require of me? What does it require of me right now? What does it require of me in this situation? What does love require of me with this person in my daily life? And as we answer that question, Lord, as we live the answer to that question, may we give praise to you, God our Father and your Son Jesus, who is our Savior, our teacher, our role model, and our never-ending source of love for one another. And it's in his name we ask this. Amen.